remind people about the role of correlations in thermodynamic directionality, and then talk about quantum states, and in particular pure quantum states, and how entanglement and thermality due to entanglement kind of drastically affect this directionality. And then I'll finally finish by talking about some recent work on generalized fluctuation theory that applied for arbitrary quantum states in high correlation environments. Okay, so let's just recap first. So there are a lot of traditional problems with time in physics. In ordinary quantum mechanics, it's just a classical parameter. And going to relativistic scenarios or quantum field scenarios doesn't really help. And you have other additional issues, such as in quantization screens of gravity. So, but really what we want to talk about is directionality of time. And it's a simple fact that we observe a common directionality towards to all the physical processes in the universe. And so the strange thing is that there's a commonality to all those directions. So gases expand, stars burn out, but they all do it in the same direction. And the fundamental laws are CPT invariant, and so the ordering is not from the laws, but really from the statistical properties involved. And so there are lots of different arrows, but in one way or another, they're generally attributed to have a common origin, being the thermodynamic arrow, which in itself stems from boundary conditions. So let me just discuss these boundary conditions. And the canonical situation to capture this directionality is generally a bipartite system where two parts are in two thermal states. And in general, you don't have complete uniformity of temperatures, and so one is hotter than the other. And historically, the key assumption from which directionality comes from is Boltzmann's molecular chaos assumption. And that really is that the quantum state of the bipartite system splits up into a product state. There are no classical correlations and there's no entanglement. And so it's an entirely local description of the physics. And so if you're given this product state quantum system and allow it to interact A and B unitarily, then the composite system evolves as shown, subject to, for example, energy conservation. Now, as is well known, the thermal states or Gibbs states have a particular property. If we define a free energy function, which is really expectation value of Hamiltonian minus the von Neumann entropy at a given temperature scale given by reciprocal beta, then the Gibbs state is special and unique in minimizing the free energy function. And it's really this inequality which then gives you the directionality. So if we return to the bipartite scenario and imagine a unitary interaction, you really want to look at the local properties, the local energy transfers between the two parts. And so you imagine A and B interacting, evolving to some new final states and final reduced states, rho AF, as given. And so for the time being, we assume that no work is done, meaning the Hamiltonians of the systems don't change, and define the heat flow, for example, into A, really by the difference in the expectation values of the Hamiltonian. And then the entropy change is really the change in the local entropy of the subsystem. So as I said, applying the fundamental free energy relation that the Gibbs states minimize the function to both A and B, you arrive at a really a central equation which relates the heat flows for A and B for their given temperatures with a change in an information theoretic function, the quantum mutual information, which really just measures the deviation of the composite state rho AB from a product state. And it's really this change in mutual information which sets the directionality. So if the system initially starts off uncorrelated, well, it's starting from zero, it can only go up. And so the change in the mutual information is greater than or equal to zero. And so the central equation becomes this, yes?
Sorry, can you go back to the last slide?
Sure.
Why is it that you can write the change in the mutual information as a sum of the change in entropy on A and the change of entropy on B? Like if I went from a pure product state to a pure entangled state, then you know the entropies on the marginals would change. Maybe there's another counterexample. I guess I'm just curious about that last equality.
This here?
No, sorry, the one above.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so in deriving this, you have to put in the fact that the unit transformation and its energy conserving. So it's not trivial that that follows.
So if I look at the expression for the mutual information, I would have imagined that there could also be a delta S rho AB difference in...
It looks like that zero delta S rho AB.
Yeah, so why is that? If the...
Unless delta SA is not delta of S of rho, but that would be...
So delta SA is the just a change in the local entropy of A. And so really what's happening is you're just starting with a product state, and so the entropy factors over the two. So the sum of the initial entropies, sorry, the sum of the total entropy is just, let me say that again. The initial entropy is just the sum of the local entropies.
Right.
The system then evolves unitarily. The total entropy does not change, but correlations develop. And all this is doing is measuring the deficit in that change.
So is delta SA equal to delta of S of rho A or not?
Delta SA is S of A at the final point minus S of A at the initial point.
And what's the difference between that and delta of S of rho A? Like just naively, it looks if I take delta I, I'll get delta S.
Oh, no, they're the same. This is just notation.
Okay, yeah. But then doesn't that mean the delta S of rho AB is zero?
It does, because rho AB remains pure.
Yeah, otherwise, that's right, it's got to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, it's a unitary interaction.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so assuming no initial correlations, you get the standard famous Clausius relation. And then if you stare at it a little bit and juggle the inequalities. If TA is less than TB, then you the above inequality predicts that heat always flows into A. And so that's the predicted thermodynamic error on average. Okay, so that's really the background, and now I want to talk about some recent results, and I can spend greater or lesser amount of time on the topics depending on people's interest. So I tried to make it of foundational interest. So in recent years, there's a proposed resolution of the fact that you see a common directionality to physics by Lorenzo Marconi. And it was kind of it was an interesting idea. And so it's kind of worth a little attention. The central idea was that every entropy decreasing event must necessarily be associated with a reduction in classical records of that event. And so in a sense, the argument goes, we don't see entropy decreasing events because any such events that occur are necessarily erased in classical records. So memory records are identified with classical correlations, and the claim is that entropy decreasing events always coincide with erasure. So really, you can just imagine a memory record system and some entropy decreasing event, and you have classical correlations between the two. Unfortunately, the argument is flawed, but it's kind of flawed for an interesting reason. And in fact, it's not a problem classically, but only arises quantum mechanically. In fact, you can construct a simple, pure quantum situation in which you have an entropy decreasing event, but classical records of it turn out to be increased. And this is in distinction to classical theory, in which the statement would be true. And so, unfortunately, quantum mechanics actually makes things worse. And entropy decreasing events can have enhanced classical correlations. So what's actually happening is that you have a total amount of correlations. A part of it is quantum mechanical, part of it is classical. And whereas you might have an entropy decreasing event, you can convert some of the entanglement into classical records, even though the total thing is decreasing. So all this does is show that the issue of correlations in relation to entropy decreasing events has a lot of structure. So, well, we can ask, what happens with quantum mechanical states? So I had this central relation, which I said really dictated the directionality of the thermodynamic processes. And so the central idea is quite simple. If the system starts off initially correlated, those correlations can decrease in a process. And so delta I can be negative. In other words, this inequality no longer forces heat to flow only one way. If delta I is less than zero, you can spontaneously and on average have processes which would seem paradoxical, basically.
Sorry, is that any different than a refrigerator?
Yes.
How so?
Well, with a refrigerator, you generally need to consume some free energy. And for the refrigerator, you actually require standard thermodynamic directionality.
So you're saying there isn't free energy criteria for this that would be for a standard refrigerator?
What's actually going to happen is that the correlations present have a thermodynamic value. And so whereas you might write down free energy relations, those free energy relations generally apply to uncorrelated systems, and in high correlation environments must be modified to take into account the correlations present in your system.
Isn't it going to cost me something to make those correlations in the first place? Thermodynamically?
Well, this would depend on your system. For example, if you were working in the ground state of a system, it might be unavoidable that you have correlations. And also, there's a result that says that basically typical pure quantum states generically have large amounts of entanglement. So really, it's a question of the questions are, how does directionality get modified by the correlations? How does this directionality dissolve? And then how does thermodynamics behave in the precision manipulation of small quantum systems, possibly involving correlations and or entanglement?
One thing that's not clear to me is, in the presence of initial entanglement, is it obvious that the thermodynamic variables, QA, QB, TA, and TB, are all the relevant ones? That you know, maybe you're just missing out on sort of key thermodynamic variables by focusing on those.
Sure. So, of course, the same thing can be said classically, right? You have an incomplete set of observables that you actually access. And so the idea is exactly the same in quantum scenario. If you have complete control over the, if you have an information complete set, then it's entirely reversible and you have perfect knowledge of the system. But if you are restricted to only local observables, then you generically have thermal marginals, but the correlations may play a role in the sense of activating the observables you don't have access to.
So if I understand you correctly, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth here, but can you sort of consume the purity in the correlations, kind of degrade the correlations, and sort of have this impression that you know you're getting work from nowhere because all you've done is focus on the local variables?
Yep.
But you really have consumed something, it's purity in the correlation.
Yes. Okay. So actually, that was a good point, because I suppose it's really a distinction between the second law that the entropy doesn't decrease and thermodynamic directionality. If you don't have access to the full set, you can have something which seems paradoxical, but it's still perfectly well understood unitary evolution. But you do have to restrict to your set, so only measurements commuting with your Hamiltonian, for example. So the same is true classically. Okay. So an unusual thing is that, well, if you have a highly correlated quantum system and you observe anomalous thermodynamic behavior, it actually constitutes a novel entanglement witness, simply from the fact that the change in the mutual information across the separable states can only be so large, whereas over the full quantum state space, it can be twice as large. Four times as large. And so for a sufficiently large reversal, you deduce that the state is entangled. And so whereas you might have, you know, schematically the standard entanglement witness being a hypersurface slicing through the state space, the entanglement witness is nonlinear. It requires only local measurements of energy, and the focus is just on the transformations that you observe. So it's not that complex. It's just the fact that correlations can be much stronger in quantum mechanical systems. Okay. So we can look at an extreme scenario in which you have just pure multipartite quantum states. And so it's well known that most pure states picked from the Haar measure are massively entangled. And if you impose an energy constraint, then you have the recent result, which says that most states have thermal marginals if you look at a sufficiently small subsystem. And this is quite a powerful result. Of course, you can naturally question the physical nature of picking from a higher measure. But it's ultimately a concentration of measure effect. So as an example of just how things would go in a toy quantum mechanical situation, You can consider the simplest situation of three qubits and defining a reversal of the arrow being the sum of the changes of qi over ti being negative. And you can choose your Hamiltonian so that the energy of the entire system is really just the sum of the smallest eigenvalues of the reduced states. And it's quite easy to construct pure tripartite state such that you have these thermal marginals. And the parameter space is a tetrahedron, just with increasing energies, and has some nice properties. It's just a nice setting to work in. But if you look at a constant energy slice, the standard uncarded situation is constrained to move in a forward cone, whereas for pure states, because pure states can be reversibly transformed to any other pure state, you can reversibly transform to any thermal marginals available. And so it's really, there are no constraints on the energy transfer. And so if you were to imagine random interactions, the uncorrelated situation will unavoidably evolve towards thermal equilibrium, whereas a pure state example might random walk over parameter space. You can consider mixed states equally well and look at heat flow patterns as you vary parameters. But the basic thing to take out of this is that the correlations, the effect of the correlations is to enhance the fluctuations or they can both reverse and enhance the standard direction. So you can have heat flow which is stronger than normal. In other words, you can almost enhance the conductivity through using the correlations.
So just what are the axes of these graphs? I gather the vertical is the heat flow.
Yeah, so I'm glossing over a little bit here. It's really a mixed state situation of three qubits. And the parameters are interaction parameters. So that actually ends up, so they're T and S. So you're really talking about exchanging of energy between pairs of qubits. And T and S are just the parameters on the axis.
So for certain parameters in the entangled case, Q goes negative and
yes.
B flows backwards.
So no, an important
that's
point.
That's the bottom line.
Yes, yes. But also more importantly, just because your correlations doesn't mean you have any sort of distortion. You have to activate them with an appropriate Hamiltonian, which makes sense. Okay, so the three have variousing effect. And so you really have enhancing and de-enhancing entirely due to correlations. Okay, so when we were working on this, we had the fun idea of what this might imply for more exotic scenarios. So if you believe the universe has a pure quantum state, which describes everything, well, you can ask the question, you have constraints on the initial conditions of the state, such as homogeneity and isotropy, but you don't have any constraints on correlation patterns on the initial state. So one potentially fun calculation to do would be to actually look at the nucleosynthesis formation of elements in the early universe, which rely on standard thermodynamic directionality. And the calculations are quite robust and quite elementary. And ask the simple question, well, how what constraints does the observed abundance of elements in the universe place on the quantum states that could have began the universe? In other words, you turn up the correlations until you reach predictions that just aren't matched by observation. So I thought I'd just throw that in. Okay. So how long do I have?
Half an hour.
So I'll just mention some work that grew out of the mixed state analysis, and which is interesting in its own right. If you take a mixed bipartite quantum state and ask the question, as I range over the unitary orbit of that state, how can the correlations vary? And the thing is that the mutual information between the two parts cannot vary arbitrarily high. For example, if you take the maximum mixed state, you can't generate any entanglement. It's just stationary, or any correlations at all. It's just stationary under the unitary action. Whereas for pure states, you can vary it from zero to maximum 2 log d. And so it's a technical question, but it has nice little applications in thermodynamics, such as trying to localize purity through some sort of unitary transformation. And so the basic question is, you have this total mutual information, and you analyze the function over the unitary orbit of a fixed state rho. So you take rho and evolve it to some sigma v through arbitrary unitary. And it actually turns out to be surprisingly complex. So the asymmetric case of different dimensions is much harder, but in the case where A and B have the same dimension, the maxima of the function are easy, and they're obtained by taking rho AB and evolving it, evolving the eigenbasis to a generalized Bell basis. If you do that, the marginals are maximally mixed, and therefore the SA and SB are both log D, and the total entropy remains the same. So that's the easy one. The minima of the function are actually quite hard to calculate. The technical point is that the total entropy SAB is a constant on the unitary orbit. And so all you have to play with is the sum of the local entropies. However, minimizing the sum is not the same as minimizing the entropies individually. And we had to develop a formalism to describe this, which instead of considering the orbit itself, you consider the function on the convex hull of the orbit. And there's just a nice result where you can lift this description to a classical description in terms of symplices and apply some majorization. But it turns out to be a computationally very hard case, and we suspect that in general it's MP hard to actually find the minima. Okay. So what I've described is really the standard thermodynamics of expectation values and directionality within the context of expectation values. But in recent years, you have the development of fluctuation theorems, which really go beyond the traditional description of thermodynamics. And so the distinction, they're distinct from the fluctuation dissipation theorem, which is just for linear response. And they're really quite powerful non-equilibrium relations in which you have a thermodynamic system and you can subject it to arbitrarily violent dynamics. And the origin of the generality is from two very simple fundamental assumptions. So the probably most well-known is the Jarzynski work relation, which the left-hand side is an ensemble average over all statistical realizations in which you extract some mechanical work at a temperature 1 over beta, relating it to, and then under arbitrary and non-equilibrium dynamics, relating it to equilibrium values for change in free energy. Also related, you have various detailed fluctuation theorems which really say tell you the ratio of the probabilities of some forward process compared to some backward process. In other words, the probability of an egg breaking versus the probability of it unbreaking. And they're generically the form that one side is exponentially suppressed in the magnitude of the quantity of interest. Okay, so as I said, these are strictly stronger formulations of the second law in the sense that one implies the other. And so the right-hand side is just the fact that the extractable work from a system is bounded by the decrease in the free energy. And and so these relations are valid for basically a wide range of Markovian dynamics. Okay, so we really want to develop an exchange fluctuation theorem which describes, which provides a relation for directionality or and say heat transfer in highly correlated quantum systems. So the as I said before, the power comes from the simplicity of the assumptions that go into it. The first is time reversal invariance for the underlying Hamiltonian dynamics, while the second is thermal marginals. So the first assumption of time reversal invariance is just simply expressed in the anti-unitary time reversal operator, which takes, viewed on a kind of classical phase space setting, should just be understood as reversing momenta while leaving position unchanged. And in the quantum mechanical setting, the only way you can have this is if theta is an anti-unitary rather than unitary symmetry operator. And we demand that the all the Hamiltonians involved are invariant under this. So the internal Hamiltonian for A, the internal Hamiltonian for B, and also the interaction. Okay. Are people okay with the theta?
Yep. Can I think of it as represented by transpose in the quantum case?
Yes. Well, you need to define what your momenta are. I mean, you actually need to put in physics into the definition of theta because a priori you don't specify what the momenta are and what the position variables are. So I view it as an entirely, like a classical symmetry, and you consider it on the classical states and just make sure that whatever momenta you consider, whether they're angular momentum or linear momentum, they're flipped.
So it's more specific. So in a lot of textbooks, they'll tell you that a complex conjugation, for example, is time reversal. But then, of course, you have to figure out with respect to which basis. So you're telling me there's a more unique
time reversal operator, which has to do with the representation of the Heisenberg Weyl group and picking out, you know, momentum operators? Or is it ambiguous in the same way that complex conjugation is ambiguous? It relies on a basis.
I view it as ambiguous until you specify what the momenta are.
Yeah. Are you going to show us how that works, or?
No.
Okay.
But maybe we can talk about it. Well, with the Perez-Hordecki criterion, it's often compared to time reversal of one of the subsystems. But I presume that's assuming they're spin systems. I'm not sure.
So with the Perez-Hordecki criterion, it sort of doesn't matter what basis you take the transpose relative to, because if you're entangled, you'll get a negative eigenvalue. If you're not entangled, you won't. Whereas here, the invariance of your H mu seems to depend on what basis. Like if that were an operator equation, it would surely depend on what basis I'm defining the transpose relative to.
Yes.
So that's why I'm asking exactly how do you define that time reversal operator? It seems like you need to eliminate the basis dependence.
Well, if you had a Hamiltonian which was quadratic in momenta and linear in position, it would be time reversal invariant. But if you swapped X and P, it would no longer be time reversal invariant. I suppose I understand it at the level of the Hamiltonian being a function of momenta and position and coordinates, but the two are distinct. But the interpretation or the construction of it isn't needed here. Just all we need is that it is a symmetry and it's anti-unitary. So there's also kind of just a convenient notation to avoid writing big thetas everywhere, and we just use a star to denote the time reversal version. And so I'm viewing phi and chi as eigenstates of the free Hamiltonian of A and B, respectively. And it turns out that the time reversal state is also an eigenstate with the same eigenvalue. So as I said, it's best to view these as just kind of the classical states, and you're swapping momenta. Then the generic fluctuation setting involved the following steps. You have some bipartite state, quantum state, which has thermal marginals. It can be pure or it can be mixed. It can be correlated or uncorrelated. You then do an initial measurement which aims to determine the energy of the system initially, and you then let it evolve unitarily. And then you subject it to a final measurement at the end. And so really the setting involves what might be called a history for the system, in which you have an initial state and you have a sharp energy outcome, some arbitrary U, and then a final energy outcome. And for what follows, it's extremely useful to consider its time reverse twin. So the key thing about the time reverse twin is in the original state gamma, you're going from one to the other. But in the time reverse twin, you're doing the opposite in the sense that you start at the final position with reversed momentum. You evolve it under the same unitary interaction. Then you unavoidably get back to the conjugated initial position. So all you have to do is keep this picture in mind for the phase-based trajectories. So really, you've got this large set of histories. And we're really interested in sharp energy transfers between the two subsystems. And so you divide the full set of histories up, and you label each history according to what energy transfers go on. And the variables we use is that the energy of one, A, for example, changes by a certain amount, and the total energy changes by some delta epsilon. And these are just defined as you'd expect. The change in total energy is with respect to the free Hamiltonians between the final and initial states. And in a similar way for Q, between final and initial states for A. Yes. And so we're actually going to interpret this Q as being heat transfer. Okay, then we really want to know something about the likelihood of one type of process compared to its time reverse twin. In other words, how likely is it for an egg to break rather than unbreak? And so we consider the probability of a single sharp history for the system, which is given by this expression here, starting in phi chi, going to phi dash chi dashed, and the probability that you just started in phi chi. And so now we're really saying we do sharp projective measurements. And I'll come back to whether you can do POVM element measurements later on. But for now, it's a sharp rank one projective measurement. And the twin pairing trick is really compare gamma with gamma star, the time reversed version. So we now want to put in the two ingredients of time reversal invariance and thermality. So what does time reversal invariance imply? Well, if you analyze the probability of going from phi chi to phi dash chi dash, you can, it's under U, the unit tree, but because of the time reversal invariance, you have this relation here where the theta operator has anti-commuted past the complex number I and changed it to plus IT. But this is just U dagger. And if you put this into the original expression, you obtain this relation here. So what does this mean? It just means that the probability to go one way under U equals the probability of going on the lower trajectory under the same U. So you turn on exactly the same Hamiltonian interaction. Then the second condition, well, this is a little bit more messy. This term is really giving you the probability of starting in some sharp energy state. But we only want to assume thermal marginals and nothing more. And so it's possible to do it's possible to write this almost in a adding and subtracting way, in the following form, where the probability is almost given by Boltzmann factors. However, these are distorted by a function I, which is given by this expression here. And it's really like a sharp version of the mutual information, but only for the states phi and chi. So what I'm saying is if you put this in here, then you truly get back to the original expression. But importantly, you've identified the correct form of the function that will be needed. So the second relation is quite simple. It's just saying that the probability of initially finding yourself in a fixed energy eigenstate is given by this expression here. If I were 0, then you'd have the Boltzmann distributions you'd expect. Now, we're also going to use the same expression evaluated for the time, the time-reversed state of phi dash chi dash. So those two trajectories, these two probabilities are the probabilities of starting at the start in both of them. So you're really looking at the amount of this state in your initial quantum state. So we have these two relations which follow from the two fundamental assumptions. And if you combine them, you find that the ratio of the probabilities of the two histories is just given by this expression here, where delta of I is a change in the sharp mutual information in the initial quantum state. Well, if you just rearrange this and sum over all histories of the above equation, the left-hand side is this expectation value, and summing over gamma is the same as summing over gamma star, because there's one for each one, and the probability sum to one. And so we obtain a generalized non-equilibrium relation for thermodynamic processes in correlated system. Well, we can also use this and look at the probability of, yes, when we do measurements, we don't necessarily do sharp measurements all the time, but maybe we measure the average energy, or we're not interested in the exact quantum state, more the energy transfers involved. In other words, we might be interested in heat flow into A of Q and some total change in energy, delta E. If you follow through the relations, you find that instead of being exponentially suppressed, you get an inequality, which is of this form here, where delta I lower and delta I upper are non-trivial values for the mutual information change for the initial state. But the point is that this is an expression of the distortion of the directionality due to the correlations. So it's a little awkward, but intuitively it should make sense. And so for the case of energy conservation and no change in correlations, you get the the standard exponential suppression of one direction over the other. Just to convince you that this is a valid generalization, if you start with the fluctuation expression and apply Jensen's inequality, you get a generalized Clausius relation, similar to the one mentioned before, whereas before the right-hand side was the total mutual information of the quantum system, now you have something slightly different. It's a averaged delta I. However, it turns out to be effectively describing the classical correlations between the two systems initially. And the origin of this classicality is really because you're forced into doing projective measurements if you want to work within a fluctuation theorem scenario. And in general, these classical correlations are smaller than the total. I won't talk about it, but you can modify work relations to derive a bound on the extractable work. It's really just using the directionality of the previous analysis in a situation in which you extract mechanical work from heat flow. And you find as you'd expect, that the initial correlations have some mechanical or energetic value in a similar way to Zillard engine. Okay, so just before I finish up, this classicality is slightly annoying because if we start with the averaged expectation, the expectation values, and look at heat flow in that case, well, we can have extremely dramatic variations in which you preserve quantum coherence and the physics is described by the total quantum mutual information. But in the fluctuation settings, by virtue of doing the projective measurements, you're killing off any entanglement. And this is also true in Jarzynski work relations as well, and hasn't really received much attention. So the quantum versions of fluctuation relations are really highly classical, and you're not really making use of much of the quantum machinery. However, there's a big obstacle, and if you try and do POVMs and make use of this time reverse pairing trick, you find that the final POVMs must basically be quantum states or of the same form as the states prepared by the initial measurement. And this seems difficult to get around. Okay, let me finish up. So I've given you kind of a bit of a whirlwind tour of this recent work. Although the final section, I think, is most interesting to me at the moment. It'll be desirable to describe a genuinely quantum mechanical fluctuation theorem, whether it's for work or heat or entropy. I'm currently doing work on extending this to single-shot fluctuation scenarios. And also of interest, you have a lot of very nice work on feedback control in which you model a Maxwell daemon, basically, who is adjusting the control parameters of a system conditional on some quantum measurement that is performed, which has been experimentally tested and shown to be correct. Basically giving an operational, experimental realization of the role of the mutual information in the process. Okay, I'll finish there. Thanks.
Questions?
So in the fluctuation theorem, you assume that at the initial and the final times, the overall state was thermal. And you described it as, you know, the calculating the relative probability of an egg breaking and an egg unbreaking. I'm not sure, but isn't, you know, the process of an egg breaking not a quasi-thermal trajectory? Like, is it really a thermal state at all points in that trajectory?
Oh,
I would have expected it to be a kind of non-equilibrium transition.
Yep.
Whereas what you're doing is sort of a transition, which is a thermal state at all points.
No, only at the start. You don't.
And at the finish.
No. It turns out that you don't need to assume it finishes in a thermal state.
But you assume that the time-reversed trajectory also starts in the thermal state. And that doesn't imply that the final state of the forward time is also a thermal state, maybe?
No. So it's kind of an odd feature. That time-reversed final state is purely, it should be viewed as an initial state in that thermal initial state. It's a pure state in the initial thermal state. So you're not necessarily assuming it finishes in a thermal state.
I see.
Yeah. And obviously not thermal throughout.
Because you're saying if I have this egg-like system here in a thermal state, what's the probability that it starts out intact and evolves to some broken state, and then there's also some probability that it starts out broken and evolves to some unbroken state?
Yes. Yeah. So okay. the relations are sharp versions of the standard thermodynamic relations in the sense that you're really dealing with pure state instances at the start and at the end. You're not saying this mixed state to this mixed state. The only mixed state element is the initial mixed state with the thermal margin.
Anyone else?